When you're starting a new job, help from a seasoned professional can make the difference between success and failure, especially in a job with a high rate of stress. Mentors can help their new coworkers avoid mistakes, learn new systems faster, and do a better job for the people they're serving. That's the idea behind a new mentor program for social workers within the Office of Children's Services. Mentoring for Better Outcomes for Families is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Working with families and children in crisis is hard. For social workers, especially when they have huge caseloads, it's especially difficult. That leads to burnout, attrition. Continuity with families and progress on home plans can be delayed, momentum lost, and the process suffers setbacks or has to start over. That's tough for kids, their siblings, and parents, and it can be expensive. So how to help social workers stick with it and have less stress, better careers, and better interactions with families? Bring on the mentors. Just as the social workers mentor with families to help them have success together, other social workers can help their colleagues. Here to tell us about this program and what it means for Alaska families is Kim Guai. Kim is the Child Welfare Administrator within the Office of Children's Services. Hi, Kim.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. And Carly Schoenherr is a caseworker and an OCS mentor. Hi, Carly.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here, both of you. You can also join our conversation, Alaskans. Are you a mentor and have ideas or suggestions for this program? Have you experienced the program yourself or worked with social workers who are currently being mentored? Or do you have questions about the program? Give us a call statewide. It's 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or 478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. And you can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Kim, tell us some of the background. When and how did this mentor program get started?
Thanks, Lori. Yeah, this mentor program actually began out of House Bill 151 that recently got signed. I think it was last week. It was early for the House Bill 151. And so what we did is in the fall of last year, 2017, we began developing the mentor program. We got five new positions. And with those five positions, we really wanted to hone in on our practice of our new staff to help them become successful from the classroom into the field. And so in the fall of 2017, we started developing the program. We did a lot of research. We contacted other states, New Jersey being one that we really looked to on what they were doing for their mentor program. And we developed, and then we started hiring and recruiting for this program. And the whole idea behind the program is to onboard people from the very beginning, these new social workers, successfully. So they understood what they were getting into with the goal of being for them to stay and to be looking at their own secondary trauma and making sure that they're staying in the field. They know how to do the practice from the classroom into the field. And so it was really important for us to develop this program with the idea of having a competent workforce through the mentorship.
Mm-hmm. Is it modeled after programs in other places, or was it developed here?
It was developed here. We did take quite a few. Like I said, we researched other states to see what they're doing, and we kind of took bits and pieces of what was working in different states and what we thought would work here. We're a little bit unique here in Alaska because we're such a large state. Many states are county-run systems. Some are state-run systems, but we have such a vast state as far as land geographically. We wanted to figure out how we could do this in the best means possible. And so we took the best of all the programs and kind of meshed it into this mentorship program.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking about mentors for OCS workers. If you have questions or comments, or you're a mentor yourself and have suggestions, You can call us statewide, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go through a little bit about what's expected. There's a kind of a brochure about the program that Carly sent me today. Thank you. Or someone sent me today.
Yep.
And it has lines out some of the concepts: group and individual mentoring, modeling and observing, feedback discussions, support and encouragement, and community-based learning. I want to go through a couple of those. Modeling and observing. Let's talk about what that process is like.
So we really think it's important to for the mentors to be able to model what we're asking the new staff to do. And so there's a process when they're out in the field working with families and children that the mentor will be able to, maybe for the first interview with a child, maybe they'll do the interview and they'll model what kind of questions you ask, how you use open-ended formats when you talk to children. How to engage with a parent or how to engage with the tribe when you're going to a small community. So we really wanted the mentors to be able to understand what the practice was and to model that for the new staff with the idea of being able to step back as they're working with the new staff. So why today I might interview this parent, when we go to the afternoon and interview the next parent, that'll be your time to go ahead and do the interview, and they would step in if needed. But we're really trying to give them a leg up on how to interview and engage with families and interview children and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And the idea of community-based learning, is that cultural competency? What does that all involve?
Exactly. We really are trying to, when our mentors are working with staff, and again, it's all across the country, or Alaska, they're letting the Indian Child Welfare Act ICWA workers know that they're coming to the community. They try to meet with them along with the new staff, so they have developed a relationship, because it's so important that when we're in these smaller communities and even in the big communities like Anchorage, that they know what their resources are, who to engage with. If a parent needs a parenting class or they need food, how do they access that? Mm. And these mentors are helping the new staff know where those different partnerships are and how to grow a community.
Well, let's, Carly, thanks for hanging with us, and let's get you in here now. Carly Schoenherr is a field worker and an OCS social worker and also a mentor. So, Carly, tell us a little bit about how you got started as a caseworker first, and then what brought you into the field, and then we'll talk about your work as a mentor.
Yes, I started as an IA worker, which is an initial assessment worker. We do the investigations once the cases come through. Excuse me. And then I did that for about 3 years, and then I applied to be a mentor last fall, and then I was given the opportunity to be a mentor, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
So the investigations aspect of it, that can't be easy at times. I imagine it's quite stressful. How is it that you decided that this was the field that you wanted to work in?
I'm the type of person that kind of thrives in those type of environments. I think it's just ingrained in me. It's not necessarily healthy, but it's just something that I do really well at. And how I knew this job was for me was I enjoy working with families and I love children. And I loved being a part of ensuring child safety and helping families become stronger to keep the children in the home whenever possible. So,
well, it definitely sounds like you're in the right job then. Tell us about the transition to becoming a mentor for other workers within OCS. Was there some training? This is quite new. So what did you do to prepare?
Oh, well, in order to do the mentor job, you have to become an expert in the practice model in both family services and in initial assessments. So we've had a lot of training. I would say a great deal of these last 6 months have been training, which is great because I feel more confident in the ability to help train the new workers in doing the best possible job they can.
And how does it help you? Are there tools that you get to help with the stress that you're taking on? And, you know, I'm always wondering about how do people decompress?
That's a really good question. And it's something that thankfully the agency is very well aware of self-care and how we need to be better at it. And that's something that I strive to be better at myself. We know that the stress of the job can affect you, and it's always good to decompress. So how I decompress personally is the other mentors, we have conversations. So it's really good to have the support with the people that we work with that really does help decompress and kind of relax a little bit.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing a new program within the Office of Children's Services for setting up new workers, new field workers, social workers, people who are the frontline folks that work with families and children, with mentors who have been there and can help them have better outcomes, better success, and help them learn to handle the stress that invariably comes along with working with families in crisis. If you have questions or comments or you are a mentor yourself, you can give us a call at 1-800-478-8255. That's statewide, 1-800-478-8255. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Carly, are there things that you look for if you're going to mentor with someone? Is there sort of like... can you identify, wow, they're struggling or they're taking on internalizing too much of what comes with a high stress job? What's that process like?
You can generally get a feel for if a worker is going to be a natural at it, and you just have to kind of teach them the logistics of being a social worker. The ability to have an open conversation with the family and connect with the family is something that I look for with the mentor or mentees. And
well, maybe Kim, you'd like to jump in here too. You've been doing this work longer than Carly. So are there things that you look for that are either... perhaps red flags that somebody is internalizing too much and they're not figuring out how to properly process so they can still live a healthy, productive life of their own? And how do you sort of develop a care list or a checklist of helping people through that?
Great questions. What we try to do is we start the conversation about self-care from the day that they start employment at OCS, and we weave it into our training at the Child Welfare Academy, which is run by University of Alaska Anchorage. And we're all about, what is secondary trauma? What does that look like? How does it manifest? We talk about it. We do different rating scales when you first begin. And then we try to look at it again, you know, within a few months. If you're starting to feel that burnout, what does that look like? And how can you take a step back? And I think Carly was talking about how she handles her own self-care. And what makes self-care and secondary trauma a hard thing to tackle is it's different for everybody. Why some people might really want to work out every day at lunch for an hour. If we said that's the answer, everyone take, you know, their lunch and go work out, that's going to stress some people out more than they already were. So there's different ways. Like for me, for my self-care, I need to get organized. If I'm starting to feel like I'm stressed out, I've got too much going on, I know that's time for me to spend some time in my office, organize it, look at my email inbox, make sure I know what I'm doing. So it's really for the mentees or the mentors and the supervisors to figure out what is it for their individual workers that's going to make them be a successful worker, because it's so different from person to person. And, you know, one of the things that we notice is a lot of times it's the overtime that they're doing. If they're spending way more time on the job than they need to be, it adds up. And a lot of times they need to be doing some overtime, but they also need to be able to take a step back, take a day off, and we try to be really flexible about what that looks like. You know, if you need to take the afternoon off, if you need to take a longer lunch and run some appointments, we really try to make sure that we're as flexible as possible and still meet the needs of our families.
The term secondary trauma, is it similar to people who experience PTSD? Is it along those same lines, or how would you describe what secondary trauma is?
You know, and again, it's very individualized. I think that secondary trauma, what our workers experience, can be very difficult when you're talking to children who are disclosing horrible abuse that's happened, or working with a parent that's had a lot of trauma in their life. And you take on some of those from hearing those stories, seeing pictures. It can be very difficult. So we really try to have those conversations about when those occur. We've had our employee assistants that come and do debriefings at sometimes when we're having some difficult situations, or we have chaplains that'll come to our office and work with individual workers when we're starting to notice maybe it was a horrible situation that occurred. We really try to take notice of what's going on in our individual offices and make whatever accommodations we need to try to keep the environment healthy, the people healthy, knowing that it does take a toll.
Kim, you have, and to remind our listeners, this is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about mentors for Office of Children's Services Workers, OCS workers. In the studio is Kim Guai. Kim is the Child Welfare Administrator within OCS, and Carly Schoenherr, who is an OCS mentor and a caseworker. Carly, you've been doing this work for a number of years. What initially brought you into it? Kim, what initially brought you into the work almost a couple of decades ago now?
Right, 18 years. You know, what initially brought me into the work is different than why I'm still here. So what initially brought me into the work is I really loved children, and I wanted to work with children. And my eyes were opened fairly quickly that's not the biggest portion of what we do at the Office of Children's Services. It really is about the families that we serve. And so over the years, I have come to really love and embrace that we're about families. We're about helping parents, grandparents, and communities really make sure that they have what they need to help children thrive and succeed. And often that's being with their families. And so how do we do our work in order to help families become successful, communities, take care of their own? That's really why I'm still here today, is because we have really made, I think, at OCS a turn towards more holistic aspect instead of so individualized for just children. You know, that is, you talked about red flags a bit ago. That is one of the things when we hear people say, like, I just want to help children. Well, we're more than helping children. We're about the families. We're about communities. And so that is one of the things that we try to, you know, that's great that people want to help children, but there's got to be more to it. We want people to help families.
I would imagine that a lot of people, maybe I shouldn't imagine that, but it seems that people who have had past trauma, maybe in their own families, may decide and then found a path back to a healthy family relationship would want to do this work. How often is that the case, that people who have experienced a bump in the road or maybe were taken from their family and had to start over with a different family, how often is that the case that people come into this work? And then how do they do if that is their background?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. But anecdotally, I think we do have quite a few people who have had past trauma, whether they were in foster care as a child and now they're an adult. We do have people who work for our agency. And I think everyone's definitely an individual as far as like how it works for them. Some are in a better place than others. But there are definitely things that get triggered when you're working with some of the families. And so we really try to support the staff and be able to, if they want to, when they want to talk about that, that's great. But we really want people to be in a fairly healthy spot because we're here at OCS to help families. And so it's hard to be able to balance if you have your own internal significant struggles, then
sure.
That's definitely tougher than, you know, everyone's experienced something, whether it's a bump in the road or significant trauma. But how do you move into a healthy spot to help other people? And that's really what we need.
So, and Carly, maybe you could jump in here with talk a little more about the preparation for mentors. I'm sure that it's more than just, hey, you've been doing this for a while, go mentor this person. So what's the setup for you as a worker and as somebody who's going to be a mentor so that you're prepared to help others in the best possible way?
Well, doing the work for a long time and getting that underneath your belt with working with families and seeing the impact it has, and then wanting to support the new workers and get them to a place to where they can also do the same and be competent.
Is there like formalized training?
Yes, there's formalized training. We did a lot of training through CWA, Child Welfare Academy, with UAA. And so we did a lot of training through that. We've gotten a lot of courses like outside of Child Welfare Academy, with Strengthening Families, and other places and other groups like that that we've participated in, knowing who you are.
They're currently doing a
a
coaching program. So they're doing an 18-week, actually we're condensing a little bit, but they're doing a coaching program that really helps solidify the practice and how to have conversations with the mentees about maybe different ways to phrase questions. So instead of saying things like, tell the parent blah, 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 we would ask, you know, why would you think the parent would answer that way? And so it's more of a thought-provoking question rather than like, here's the answer, here's what you need to get to. It's more like, why do you think this is happening? Let's talk about different ways to phrase your questions, different ways to engage with parents and children. And so they're really working on honing those skills in this new coaching program that we're doing with the mentors. So we've really tried to broaden their experience and not just the practice, but how to engage with people, having some cultural competence, looking at the Strengthening Families programs that we're doing statewide. Lots of different training opportunities we've done with the mentors in the last 6 months.
And when you think back to when you started, Kim, 18 years ago, what's changed as far as preparation and how people come into the system now as opposed to when you started?
Oh, it's so much different. My first day that I walked into the office, I had a stack of probably 3 stacks of 3 feet high of cases. And, you know, they said, here's your cases. And I had no idea what I was doing. And then, you know, a week later, I was in training for 2 weeks. And then just kind of turned out on my own with some supervision, but it was definitely a lot different than what we have today. We really try to onboard our new staff in the office. And so if they're in, say, Antioch or St. Mary's or any of those offices, how do we welcome people in? How do we start them off? And right now we have the mentors reaching out to them the first day of employment and saying, you know, like, welcome, here's what my role is, here's what I'm going to do to help out. And then they go into our training program at UAA, the Child Welfare Academy, within 2 to 4 weeks, typically, of when they start at OCS. So they have some time in the office, and they've learned some. They've done some shadowing. We have what's called a staff development plan, which they did not have back in my day. And so it really talks about all the things that they need to know and understand, and it's a plan for 6 months. And so in that plan, it lays out all the things that they need to do before they go to the training program at UAA. Then they're in training from anywhere for typically around 3 weeks. We will be extending that thanks to House Bill 151, which is great. And then they go back to the office, and then the mentors work with them for the next, you know, 5 to 6 months. And they really build upon what they've learned in the classroom and then put it into practice. And so during that process, they also work on a training plan that's developed between the mentor and the mentee and the supervisor. So the three of them talk about, like, what are the behavioral indicators when you're working as a social worker? Like, what would that look like to have good engagement with a parent? A parent that doesn't want to engage, how are you going to make that happen? And so they talk about where their strengths lie and then where maybe some of their weaknesses are, and then how to get some of those weaknesses up to strengths. And so they work on that for the next six months. And then they have the very honest, open conversations about providing them feedback, talking to the supervisor to let the supervisor know, here's what we're seeing as far as their strengths. Here's some areas that they need to keep working on. And they've been really great conversations. And as I said, we started developing the program, but we launched it in March of this year. So we have had, I'm going to guess probably around 30 to 40 new people come through. Our last group was a little bit smaller, but July is going to be a big month for us. But so we've been working with those people, and the mentors fly out. So if we have a new worker out in Craig, Alaska, the mentors are flying out and working with the mentee when they get back to the office on after their training, which is great because we don't have supervisors in all of our 24 field offices. And so if you go through classroom training, and classroom training is great because we have simulation rooms. We have actors.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we have actors that we work with that will play a child or play a parent. But that's still different when you're knocking on a stranger's door and you're going to have to engage that parent and you're going to have to ask questions that could be uncomfortable. And so we try to send the mentor out with the new mentee when that has to happen. And so they can get some experience under their belt, as Carly was mentioning. And, that's hard enough. But we also have, the technical side of our business, which is all the documentation, all of the forms, all of the requirements. That also is something that we don't delve into too much at our training academy because we're looking at big ideas as far as like engagement, what are we supposed to be doing, what does our practice look like, but we don't say like here's the form and here's how you request funds and things like that. That's what the mentors are helping them do.
It sounds vastly different than 18 years ago when you were essentially like handed a stack of cases and said, okay, go forth and make things better.
Yeah, it definitely is different. Even 18 years ago, we had the Child Welfare Academy at UAA, but they have made drastic changes and differences, and they're a true partner with us on helping getting our staff trained and up on board. They've been helping train our mentors, which has been fantastic. So it's a real great partnership that we've been able to make a lot of shifts in our training for new staff compared to 18 years ago.
We are talking about mentors for Office of Children's Services workers, helping them have better success by matching them up with people who have gone before them and can help them integrate their skills at a higher level and also be better prepared for the stresses of the job. This is Talk of Alaska. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about mentors, take your calls and questions as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing mentors for field workers, for caseworkers within the Office of Children's Services. It's a new program that just got started in March and is in part due to House Bill 151, large part?
Primary? Large part, yes.
Large part, okay. House Bill 151, helping people be better prepared for the jobs that they're taking on, helping families, helping children. But it's certainly a stressful occupation, and having a mentor help you avoid some of the mistakes that maybe they encountered in the past can certainly help people have longevity and do a better job for all of us. You can call if you have questions or comments, or you're a mentor yourself and have suggestions. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-8255. You can call 550-8422 if you're in Anchorage. 550-8422. And you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Kristen is in Anchor Point. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just kind of wondering, considering the fact that this is costing money in both picking the mentor, and I'm sure they're getting paid extra to do this, plus flying them around to various places, wouldn't the money just been better spent hiring more people? Because the reason for the stress is they have too much work. Their caseloads, they're overloaded. It would seem to me more people would, you know, relieve the stress and perhaps more ability to reach supervisors and talk to them instead of having mentors come out could help with the way things are discussed within the system. It just seems to me that the money is not being properly used this way. It would be better to hire more people and have more ability to talk within the system to find out what's going on.
All right, Kristen, thanks for your call and your comments. Let's give Kim and Carly a chance to respond. Do mentors get paid extra?
Well, they do. Our social workers are called protective services specialists. And so we have protective service specialists 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s. Protective service specialist 4s are supervisors. Most of the case-carrying workers are protective services 1s and 2s. The mentors are protective service specialist 3s. So they do get a little bit additional money to do that. So, but I think Kristen's question is great. However, what we have, our problem at OCS is we have a high number of turnover. Mm. And so what we know is we need to get our employees to stay. If we had our employees stay and were successful at what they are doing, we would be successful with families and children. And so we need to stop the turnover. Last year, I believe our turnover was around 40%. And so that's significantly challenging for us because we have got to decrease that number because it's interruption for children and families when they have numerous caseworkers or we have a caseload that doesn't have a worker. Maybe it's a one or two person office. And when one person leaves, now that other person has to absorb all of those cases, which means less services for families. And so one of the things for the mentor program was to help their knowledge and their transfer of learning, but also to help workers stay. Our hope is that there'll be longevity, that people will stay at the job rather than leaving. We know nationally it's around 18 months that usually workers last in child welfare. Ours is lower than that. And so we need to increase those numbers. And one of the ideas is using the mentor program to do that, to really understand what child welfare is about, what our practice is about, and how to stay on the job and what that looks like. Because there are many of us, you know, I've been with OCS 18 years. Carly's been at 3.5 years. We have a lot of people who stay, but we have a big number of turnover. So we've got to decrease that number.
You know, it's so interesting to hear you say, and somewhat shocking, that people are staying in the jobs on average less than 2 years nationally and even a lower amount in Alaska. But it also helps me understand then why Carly at 3.5 years is now a mentor, because she's made it longer than 40% of the people who are coming
exactly
through the system. That is a very troubling aspect of what you're dealing with, clearly. And when Kristen mentioned expense associated with flying a mentor out, because when you were talking about that, I thought somebody's going to take exception to that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't surprised to get that call. But when you talk about the expense of flying someone to mentor somebody at a remote location, the expense of bringing in a new caseworker,
exactly,
there must be somewhat of a cost-effective amount there, that crossover. I'm not stating it well, but Carly, when you think about having to bring in new people every year and a half or so, and Kim, the expense of that has to be astronomical.
It is astronomical. You know, for this training that I talked about, the Child Welfare Academy, that a new employee comes to every after they're on the job for 2 to 4 weeks, that's 3 weeks that they're here in Anchorage that they're getting trained. And if they're from Anchor Point or any of that remote areas around Alaska, that includes, you know, airfare and hotels and things of that nature. So, which is great. We invest in our staff. We want them to be fully trained and understand what's going on, but we need them to stay. And so to really make that happen, we're hoping that the mentor program is going to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does cost a lot to train them. If they're going to leave in 6 months to 12 months, that's a lot of money that we've spent that isn't benefiting us. It's not a good investment. And so this mentor program hopefully will, although it's going to cost money to fly them out, hopefully it'll cost less because the new worker will stay.
And also, there has to be a considerable expense associated with if a caseworker leaves and you've got to start over with the court process, perhaps, or what happens at that point as far as the expense of restarting a case or adding a new person into the mix with working with a family. So they've got to learn someone new who's going to be asking those same uncomfortable questions and trying to form a new relationship. What's the timeline that average takes to get back up to speed again?
I wish I knew the actual timeline, but there are numbers out there that talk about every time you get a new worker, how much longer that delays permanency for a child. So whether that's reunification with their parents or an adoption or a guardianship, when you have to wait for a new caseworker and then that new caseworker needs to establish a relationship and understand what the needs are of the family and what services were offered and what services haven't been offered, that all adds up to additional delays that mm-hmm. we don't want to see happen.
This is Talk of Alaska. We are discussing a new program within the Office of Children's Services for mentors, for field workers, for caseworkers that are the frontline folks working with families and children across the state. And the idea is to help them have longevity, have better success, and better outcomes for families, ultimately. 1-800-478-8255 if you'd like to call with a comment or a question. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 550-8422 in Anchorage, 550-8422. You can also email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. So walk us through, let me ask one more question of you first, Carly, before I move on to that. You started 3.5 years ago. Kim started 18 years ago. She talked a little bit about the difference in experience. How about you? Has it changed even in just that amount of time, would you say, from when you were first trained as a field worker to today?
Yes, it's changed a lot. The thing with the agency is it changes constantly. And that's kind of a good thing. We're always trying to find better ways to serve our families. And as a mentor, or even as a caseworker, it can be hard to adapt, but we realize the impact it does have on families, and so we do. I know that when I first started, I didn't have a mentor. And like Kim, I was kind of given, here's your first case, you know, kind of figure it out. And there's a big difference between going to training in a classroom and then having to implement everything you learned in the few weeks that you're in. It's kind of a little bit of a disconnect. And now that there's mentors, we're kind of filling into that disconnect and we're showing how we can connect the two. But when I first started, it was kind of like sink and swim. Mm. You know, here's what you got. Let's see what you can do. And fortunately, I did really well and I was able to be successful as a caseworker in the field. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
And now you're a mentor.
And now I'm a mentor.
So the training that you had was sort of like flight simulator training, but then all of a sudden you were handed the keys to the jumbo jet and said, go take off.
Good luck.
Pretty much. I mean, I had a really supportive supervisor, so that was also very helpful. But I also know that I'm grateful that I did, because a lot of communities in the rural areas don't have on-site supervisors, and so they don't even have that kind of support. So that's why now as mentors, it's good that we can be out there and be that support for them.
Walk us through how a case starts with OCS. How does that work? It's a process that often can be very misunderstood. What happens when a report is first made to the Office of Children's Services? Kim?
So when a report is first made, typically it's through a phone call that comes to our agency, and our intake department takes those phone calls, and they go through collecting the information, examining the information. Oftentimes they need additional information, so they'll reach out to other people that may know the family, like whether it's a medical provider or a past social worker, and then they screen the case in for investigations or initial assessment, or they screen it out. And if it's screened in, it goes to an IA worker, which is what Carly used to be here in Anchorage. And then they go out, they have time frames to go out and initiate. What that means is face-to-face with the victim, to talk to the victim that's been identified in the report about the maltreatment regarding, and also regarding their safety. 90% of our cases, our initial assessment cases, actually it's around 88%, are closed. They don't go any further than the initial assessment process. The 10 to 12%, we open for services in some capacity. What that means is we've identified that either the children are unsafe or that they're at high risk of maltreatment and the family needs services. And then those cases typically get transferred into what we call family services. And the family services worker picks up the case and engages with the family, engages with the children. This is usually many of our cases that are in foster care. They work with the foster parents as well, the resource families. And they develop case plans. They look at behavioral change, what kind of services will best meet the parents' needs. And so they work on developing that. They have federal timeframes of permanency. They also have, you know, local timeframes with your court system about reports, when to meet, things of that nature.
88% are closed out after the initial assessment?
Correct.
That's surprising to me. What are those cases? I mean, what do you attribute to that high number of just a quick check and that's it?
A lot of times communities are concerned about what's going on in the homes. And, you know, they may have heard something maybe at school, or they heard another kid saying something, or there's always something that a concerned citizen has concern about. So they call, and it's up to us to go out and really figure out, is it an isolated incident? Is this an ongoing concern? Does it rise to a level of OCS intervention? Could we work with the family and leave the children in the home? So these are all the things that initial assessment really works on.
So some of those could be a misunderstanding.
Some
of them could be. Do people make anonymous calls, or do they have to be on record if they're calling?
No, they can be anonymous as well.
Okay. Yep. All right. How will mentorship help this process of when you have to take that next step and open a case? Or maybe even just that process where it's 88% are closed quickly. How can mentoring help? Carly, how do you think that will assist people in having better outcomes all the way around?
Well, it starts with just making contact with the family and the workers. The mentor is showing the workers how to be consistent. Consistency is key for the whole life of a case, whether it's just a few weeks to months and further. And so it's important that we build relationships with our families and we work together. And like I said, consistency is key.
Mm-hmm. What happens if you have someone who has been in the work for decades and you're seeing signs of, wow, they really need some help. They're, you know, having extreme stress or secondary trauma. How can you... They clearly can't mentor someone else because perhaps they need mentoring even after all those years. How do you address those things when somebody has been in the work for a very long time and maybe can't see that those signs themselves, that they're really struggling and kind of burning out? And how do you get them to see that and get some assistance themselves so that they can continue on?
Great question. you know, what we really try to, I guess, practice what we preach as far as like a parallel process. You know, we talk to parents and families about their concerns or their issues that may be making the child unsafe. Well, the same needs to happen with our own staff. If we're seeing things that are concerning, such as burnout or maybe not the greatest decision making, we need to have those courageous conversations with our own staff and say, what can I do to help support you? Very parallel to what we're doing with families at times. And so is it time off? Do you need to, you know, access our employee assistance? Do you need additional training? What can we do to help support you in getting you back to where you were? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really what we try to do.
Carly, did you want to add something there?
I've run into this, a worker that's even been here longer than me. And a lot of it was, they're in a rural community, and a lot of it is the lack of support that they feel. And just me being there and checking on them and making sure that they're okay, and just being there for them to talk about things has really, really helped. And so I think it's just the support piece for a lot of the workers that have been around for so long, because, you know, all the focus gets put on the new people. But really, the people who have been here a while, too, also need to be kept up to speed about how things are going. And like Kim said, having those courageous conversations with that worker and talking about the things that may need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Is there ongoing training required for people that are in this job for a long time? I mean, once you're certified as a social worker, do you go back for other new processes that come into or new ways of seeing counseling and other aspects of how you're doing your job day to day?
We do evaluations for the state of Alaska when you're employed there. However, there's a difference. You use the word social worker, and then we also have protective service specialists. So we do have some protective service specialists that their education is in social work. And if they're licensed, they do have requirements for ongoing training. But as a protective service specialist, we also have, I wouldn't say requirements, but we do offer ongoing trainings. We have trainings that happen in the like the role offices themselves. Our Child Welfare Academy goes out and does trainings with them. We also support trainings into Anchorage or Fairbanks, wherever the locations may be. And so we really try to meet our ongoing training needs of our staff. We are developing a little bit more in-depth program on that coming here in the near future. As Carly said, we're always changing.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, more questions and discussion about mentors for workers within the Office of Children's Services as Talk of Alaska continues.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
All right, we are back. And Kim, you mentioned, first of all, clarify my misunderstanding or my misspeaking about social workers. I'm throwing that term around. And as you clarified a few moments ago, not everyone is a social worker. So what's the distinction in these titles?
Well, at OCS, all of the titles, if you're working with families, a line worker, you're a protective service specialist, one or two. Now, your education may have been in social work, and you may be a licensed social worker, whether it's a bachelor's level or a master's level. So that's the distinction. They don't call themselves necessarily social workers.
Okay.
Their title on their emails and business card would say protective service specialist.
All right. Well, yeah. Thank you for clarifying that.
Sure.
And you said you had a quote from a mentor that you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, it's actually a mentee. So we have
a mentee. Sorry.
So since we've been running this program, a few of them have reached out to me to provide some feedback about what they think. And here's what one of our mentees who went through the program a few months ago, and still into it, but she's started the program a few months ago. It says, the mentor program has been an invaluable asset to me and my success in my new position here at OCS. The mentors, specifically Melanie and Carly, have been so helpful and caring in mentoring me as I learn my new position. They have been available day and night to answer questions, to guide me, to let me vent, and at times to cry over a case.
Hmm. I can see why that would be important, so that you're not, you don't feel like I have to carry all this by myself. You can kind of share the load a little bit and get feedback and clarity on what you're thinking about these things. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Edna is in Kotzebue. Hi, Edna.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question for OCS is, when OCS takes custody of a child from the parents, and then they're in custody of OCS, and the child runs away from OCS, my question is, have you ever had that kind of cases?
We definitely have had those cases where children end up running away, and we try to work closely with the family, the parents, to let them know when that has occurred, with the foster family, with the local police department, with the ICWA workers. We really want to make sure that the child is safe.
Yeah, that would be a bad situation to
Definitely.
Have a child off on their own. Thank you, Edna, for the call. Let's go to Mary in Kenai. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Did you have a question?
Not necessarily, just more of a comment. I worked for OCS just a little bit under 5 years down here in Kenai. And when I first came on, I was fortunate to have a bunch of coworkers who were very well seasoned, and I spent a lot of time with those coworkers. But shortly after that, most of them left. And I will say that that made my learning of this job much easier. This has to be one of the most challenging jobs, careers that you will ever encounter in your entire life. It's very, very complex when you work with families and communities with these kinds of issues. With that said, when I first started my caseload was about 25, but over the time, because of the meth and heroin epidemic that we encountered down here, my caseload blew up to like 133. When I left recently here in March, I had like 135 cases still. That were sitting on my desktop that needed to be dealt with, closed, or various things. I have seen, I'm hoping that this mentor program works, because while I worked in Kenai, the turnover was horrendous, and we would just get someone hired on, and then 3 months later they would leave, and it left the people that were there struggling with caseloads that were impossible and constant demands. I frequently worked overtime of 20 to 35 hours every 2 weeks. It was a very emotionally, physically exhausting job. And I guess the whole point that I'm trying to make is I think the mentor program is a great place to start. I think teaching the new workers and having people stick with them and go out in the field with them for several weeks before they're ever left alone is really important. I have seen staff in my area go out the week they've been hired, and it's crazy, and to me it seems insane, so I'm hoping that some of those things will stop and never happen again. But I do appreciate the fact that OCS is trying to do something about these issues, because the turnover I saw in Kenai was sad, and it was not that we didn't have a lot of really good people hired, it was they did not get the support that they needed when they came on the job. Some of it was supervision. In fact, a lot of it is supervision. If you don't have the right supervisor in this position, it can be devastating for the entire department.
Well, thank you, Mary, for your comments. I'm seeing both Kim and Carly nodding along at a lot of what you were saying. And we haven't touched on the subject of the grave situation with addiction and the high rates of opioid addiction and how that has been affecting families and children. But Mary raised a lot of the issues that we have been discussing about the need to keep people in the position longer. She mentioned people leaving after 3 months. It's shocking to think that someone would spend so much time being trained for something and then just find out almost immediately that they just can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're really trying, I appreciate Mary's call and her comments. What we're trying to do at OCS is really multi-pronged as far as looking for ideas and solutions. You know, we've, House Bill 151 gave us more staff, which will definitely help, more training, the mentor program. But internally, what we've been trying to work on the last year or so has been also very foundational in moving us forward to making better progress as far as who are we hiring? How are we? What do our questions look like? Who are we partnering with when we're hiring people in remote areas? Do we have the tribe on board with us? What does that look like? And so we're really trying to do a better job at hiring the people for the job, and then looking at their competencies, the mentor program. How do we retain them? What does the agency, what's the culture of that office look like? Are the supervisors trained to where they should be? And we have a supervisor program that we do through the Child Welfare Academy. And in addition to that, we launched a program around a year and a half ago called Coaching Supervisors to Best Practice. And what we know across the nation is you really have to invest in supervisors and make sure the supervisors are providing the support, the assistance, the opportunity to learn and grow as a staff member, and how they do that with their staff, and then that staff does it with parents and children and community members is what we're looking for. So it's like a trickle-down approach. But to make all these changes, it does take time. And so we're working on it, and hopefully we'll see through some time positive changes. So we're really excited about the way where we're going as an agency. Now we just need to get there.
Is there an intersection within the mentor program for ICWA issues so that people are aware of what their duties and responsibilities are when they're dealing with Indian children, Alaska Native children? What's built in along those lines? I know, Carly, you had mentioned that you've gone out to remote areas where you might be going into an area where those considerations are in place. How do these two come together?
Well, it's interesting because when our new staff go out to their the place, that, whatever, if they're going to visit a small village, like, how do they know if the airplane lands 3 miles from the village? How are they going to get into the village? And so what our mentors have done is they are learning and they're knowledgeable. Some of our mentors in the program came from rural Alaska. Mm-hmm. And so they understand, like, what you should have in your backpack. When we tell new staff to make sure you have boots, we don't mean cowboy boots. We mean, like, cold weather boots.
Right.
And so there's all these things that the mentors have learned either through experience or sharing with each other that really has helped them engage and know when you're going to a rural village, first thing you do is you call the tribe. You talk to the tribe. You let them know you're coming. We really try to enforce that in the cultural competence and understanding.
All right. Well, thank you so much to Kim Guay, the Child Welfare Administrator within the Office of Children's Services, and Carly Schoenherr, who is a field worker and also an OCS mentor within the Office of Children's Services. Thanks to Dave Waldron and Wesley Early on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.